Welcome to the Bonneville Up to Speed podcast. I'm your host, Kevin Oste, and this is a podcast covering all things land speed racing on every level, from vintage small displacement motorcycles to cutting-edge streamliners and everything in between. And today, we're honored to have another very special guest from Jessel Valve Train, Mr. Wayne Jessel. Wayne, welcome to the show.
Well, thanks for having me on. This will be my first time, and I'm looking forward to hearing it in the future with what you've got going on, because it's sure very interesting.
Oh, right on. Well, appreciate that. Yeah, the whole deal here is the sport of land speed racing is, it's very exciting, but a lot of people don't get a chance to experience it. So what we try to do is share how to get involved and some of the stories to let people know that they can do it. And that's one of the reasons why we wanted to talk to you, because you've got a pretty strong history in doing this stuff.
Well, we've been very fortunate. We've been doing it for about 15 years, and we've run our truck out there and have gotten 10 people into the 200 mile an hour club. And we also currently hold 13 different class records with it. And we're going to shoot for another couple this coming August.
That's incredible. So before we dive into the truck and the race program, I do want to start a little bit with the Jessel Valve Train business, because you guys have been innovating with engine parts, and actually a couple of years ago came up with a fresh engine design, right?
Correct. My brother actually started the company in 1980. We had raced together previously, drag racing, had an engine shop and what have you, and then we kind of went our separate ways just because of the way things were going in the racing industry for us at the time. But it was certainly no problems there. And then he got the valve train business going in 1980. And then I joined him in the later 80s. And then I've been a part of that with him ever since. But he's been working on his own engine. It's called Equal 8. And he's just wanted to do it for a long time, and he's been working on it for about 7 or 8 years, on and off. And then he finally got it finished a few years ago, and he still wanted to refine it a little bit, but we have a pretty much finished version of it now. Larry Morgan ran it in a comp car at Indy last year, and our plan this year is to run it in the truck at Bonneville.
That's unbelievable. So I had the privilege of speaking with your brother at the 2018 PRI show, and the engine had just won one of the Masters of Motors championship deal that I think Race Winning Brands was sponsoring, and it was
Correct.
A big billet trophy. Yeah, and I only got to hear a little bit about the engine. People need to understand, this is a fresh, clean sheet, completely original design and built engine.
That's correct. What happened was, over the years, we would get so many either cylinder heads or blocks in to do valve train for it or lifter layouts, and it seemed like there was always a few things missing from whichever project we were working on. So he kept a lot of things in the back of his mind by saying, well, that was a good idea, but why did they do this, and this was a good idea. And then he just wanted to tackle it, and he got quite a few different engines to take a look at, just to see what different manufacturers were doing, such as Porsche, Mercedes, Ducati, and what have you. And then all the racing applications that were out there. And he just tried to, you know, do a perfect layout for it, so nothing in the engine would be compromised. So it's his completely new, fresh platform. People say, well, is it like a Chevy? No. Is it like a Ford? No. It isn't like anything. It's just a completely new platform, which was his design and layout. And fortunately, it finally came about, and we're going to move forward with it pretty strong here.
Well, it's it takes an incredible amount of vision and ability to even identify where all the choke points are on a factory-built engine, because a lot of times we're trained to think, I guess you'd say, inside the box and say, well, this is what I have to work with, and how can I make this better with what it is? But to say, you know what, I'm just going to take the best pieces and designs from everything and make my own. It's an incredible amount of vision. And then the ability to actually build it is the other thing.
Yeah, he had a lot of outside help in doing it. Charlie Weston did the block work for us. Danny designed it, basically, and then Charlie did the programming on it and machined the block. And then Dan worked with Tom Slocko from Slocko Cylinder Heads in Pennsylvania, and he did the cylinder head. And that went back and forth several times. They thought they had something figured out, and then part of the layout wasn't correct. And then he finally hit on something, and it really came about. And then we make an awful lot of parts for the motor at our shop in New Jersey, all the accessory parts for it. But there was a group of people involved in it to make it happen. And the other thing is, you know, we certainly have the capability of doing a machine block from scratch in our facility, but with the way the business is very busy, and we hate to take our own people off of our workload to do our own projects. So that's why we opted to farm a couple of things out to get it done on the outside. But everybody worked good together, and it finally came together. And like I said, we're going to move forward with it pretty hot and heavy here.
Well, that's outstanding. And, you know, you guys have been doing this, like you said, at Bonneville for 15 years, but racing goes way back. And you said you started off drag racing. How did you get started in that? What was the first stuff you raced?
Well, fortunately, Danny's 8 years older than I am, and fortunately I had an older brother that was willing to take me everywhere with him and do things with him. And he had been drag racing back in, I guess it was 64, he started, 63, 64, so I was about 13 years old, and he would, like I said, take me with him, and I just got interested in racing. And then a couple of years later, we decided to build a purpose-built junior stock car, and with the help from Jerry Stahl and a few other top-name guys, we were able to put together what was back then one of the ultimate junior stockers that was, you know, completely built from scratch. It was probably the first one that was completely sandblasted inside and outside, and it just was a really nice car for back in the day as far as junior stockers went. And then we were fortunate enough to have a contact with Yoo-Hoo Beverage Company, which we got a sponsorship from them for the car. And ironically, one of the board of directors was Yogi Berra from the New York Yankees, who was one of my favorite players. And we went to the board meeting, and they voted to give us some money to go junior stock racing. And then Danny had an engine shop back then. I was still in school. And then we just progressed and kept on drag racing. And we personally drag raced through 1977. That was the last year we raced.
Okay. Now, you mentioned the Yoo-Hoo Beverage Company. Is that the tie-in with, I've seen some other drag race cars with, you know, the Yoo-Hoo name on them.
Well, as far as I know, that we were the only car with that, the 56 Chevy sedan delivery. The car has since vaporized. I really don't know what happened to it over the years, but several years ago, I believe it was 2014, I decided to recreate the car. And I was able to do that with a very good car to start with, and we've got it so close to being original. I found so many pieces that were correct for it, period correct. It was just there was the perfect timing to do it, and I was able to find all the parts to do it. And we took it to some shows, and we did a little bit of racing with it just for playing around. And then NHRA wanted it to put in the museum. I think it went to the museum in 2018. And it's been there ever since.
And that's the Yoo-Hoo 2, right?
That's correct. Yes.
Yeah, so that's what I saw. Yeah, that thing's incredible. Beautiful car.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah, it really did come out nice. Everybody was pleased with the way it came out.
So if you kind of hung up the racing helmet in the late 70s, What caused you guys to pick it back up again and go land speed racing?
Well, ironically, what happened in the late 70s when we were racing, Danny's engine shop was broken into, and pretty much everything parts-wise, engine-wise, and things like that were stolen. Hmm. So it really set everything back a ways. And I ventured out. I went to work for Manly Performance, and Danny was doing some things on the side. And then he had the idea, because when we were racing, we had valve train trouble. So he decided that he was going to try to tackle that in the meantime and not go back into the engine building business.
Okay.
So Danny started up the valve train company. And then, like I said, in 80, and then later on in the later 80s, I joined back up with him to try to expand the business somewhat and grow it. We were starting to get into the NASCAR end of it at that point, and he just needed some more things going on with marketing and sponsorship-wise and what have you. So, that's where I came in and helped out, and fortunately we wound up growing the business.
So as the business grew, it's an interesting world when you're making high performance valve train components, because you're interacting with people probably in every possible kind of racing.
Well, we did. We had a lot of the drag race stuff from super stocks to basically pro stocks at the time. We weren't into the Top Fuel or funny car market back then. But what was really difficult in the beginning for the company is that there were other companies that actually had shaft rocker arms. And not to discredit them, but they just didn't work. So when you took some of the top pro stock racers out there, they just were hesitant to try something new, because it was like, well, we already tried shaft rockers and that didn't work. But Danny had a different design, and fortunately we had some local fellows that we dealt with, and we knew some people that ran modified eliminator and comp eliminator cars, and they put them on. And then shortly thereafter, word got out and things were working well, and it just kind of grew from there. And it was basically in the drag race market for most of the early years. And then it was later, I guess, in the early to mid-90s, we really started getting heavy into the NASCAR industry, because they were not allowed to use shaft rockers up until a certain point. They weren't allowed to run a belt drive at one point, nor were they able to run roller lifters. So they first got the shaft rocker arms legalized, and then they came out and legalized the belt drive. Then later on, a couple years later, the truck program utilized the roller lifters, and then that went into the Busch series, and then quite a few years later, they finally put the roller lifters into the Cup series. Mm-hmm. So right now, all the NASCAR teams run roller lifters, and they have the shaft rocker arms and belt drives also.
Wow, that's incredible. And I got to hand it to you, as far as one of the greatest performance part names out there, the Jezel belt is fantastic.
Well, thank you. Yeah, well, and we've just made a big leap with that. We've come out with another new design belt that some of the top NASCAR teams are running it now, and it proves to be that it's going to be the next good thing to happen for them as far as the valve train and what have you is concerned. So that's been in the works for a while, but it looks like that's moving forward.
Excellent, excellent. Well, if we look at the Salt and at Bonneville, some people equate that to a 5-mile-long drag race, even though those who tried it know that it's not.
Right.
So what happened? You guys wake up one day and say, hey, let's just go head out west and see what we can do, or how did it all come around?
Well, what we did, we first had a stock car, a used Busch Series stock car that we ran motor and transmission in, and we would just do some testing at the mile tracks. But we knew that it was going to be a big difference going to Bonneville. So basically what we did, because probably the most important thing was valve springs. Typically, like a pro stock car or what have you, they're changing springs every run or every other run, or at least checking them and changing one or two. So we knew that that part of the valve train might be an issue. What we did, we just basically backed down on the lift and the rocker ratio. Just as a for instance, when we went out there in 2012 with Jason Line, we had a DRCE 500-inch pro stock engine in the truck with fuel injection, and we took some rocker ratio off of it and took some extra lift out of it, and we were probably maximum running at about 95 or 9600, and we made 6 5-mile runs without even taking the valve cover off of it.
Wow.
And it was just, I don't want to say it was as simple as that, but it was just a couple of things that toned it down and made it live that much longer. So that's what we've just kind of focused on in the past, and that's what we're going to do with Danny's engine, because it's basically designed to run at probably 10,500 or 11,000, and we don't want to run that kind of RPM at Bonneville. So we're going to, tone the cam down, take some rocker ratio out of it, and do a little bit different manifold for it. And we're going to probably try to run it again at about 95 or 9600. And hopefully, that'll be the test on it. To hopefully the valve train will, live as well as we think it's going to live. And that'll be the testimony there.
Yeah, for sure. And so it's interesting. A lot of times in racing, you're constantly trying to optimize everything and push the limits of everything. And your philosophy there is say, hey, well, if we back this off a little bit, our engine's going to be a lot happier. And maybe we try to, improve the rest of the vehicle, perhaps, to get the speed and just do it with the engine being happy.
Yeah, ironically, when you say trying to get everything out of it, currently Jason Line is working on the engine with us because we plan on running his son this year at Bonneville. So Jason's working on it, and he keeps mentioning several things, and I said, Jason, just remember, we're not trying for another 2/1000th of a second so we go to the pole in this pro stock race.
Right.
There's plenty of cushion there. We're going to make plenty of power. We just need to make it live. Mm-hmm. So he said, I know. I just keep trying to make it the best we can and what have you. And I said, well, let's get through this first test and we'll see how it goes. And then we can, start to up it from that point on.
Well, he's really good at what he does. And he is, pro stock mentality. So,
correct.
I get that. It must be a little interesting for him to kind of, for lack of a better term, to shift gears a little bit and think a little bit differently. But that's what land speed racing is all about. It's a different animal.
Correct. We always go there on the safe side. Like we say, we like to run it, with not a lot of timing and not too lean, because you can go out there on the first run and not be that great and go for your tune up from there. But if you try to go out there with, killer timing, like, some guys will put an extra, 2 degrees of timing in it because you're going to make another 2 horsepower. And, that can certainly bite you out there. So we just really play it on the safe side when we go and look at the tune-up and see where we can improve from there without really hurting anything. Mm-hmm. So we've really been cautious as far as the tune-up goes.
Well, that's cool. And he's a great guy. I had the pleasure of unveiling his Buick GS convertible at the Muscle Car and Corvette Nationals in Chicago a few years ago.
Yeah, so, I took that there with him.
There you go.
Yep. So I remember that.
Pull the cover off that one. Yeah. Yep. And I'm a huge Buick fan. So I was just drooling over that car. But with the, you mentioned before that you took a retired NASCAR and you were doing these 1 mile events.
Correct.
There's many ways to get involved in land speed racing. But what are your thoughts on somebody, you know, buying a decommissioned NASCAR and changing the setup on it and running it at the Salt as a way to get into the sport? Is that a good idea?
I think it's an excellent idea. Actually, I wish I had my car back now. I don't know if you know the story, but we ran the car for several years, and then I tried to sell it at next to nothing price. Nobody seemed to be interested in it, so we got a hold of Dale Earnhardt Jr. because he's got what he calls a graveyard at his property. And I said, "Would you like this car for your graveyard?" And he said, "Yes." And we took it to him the next day, and it's sitting over in his graveyard with weeds growing all around it.
Oh man! So,
but in any case, I think it's an excellent idea. The only one thing with the NASCAR car is that as of right now, there's no class for it at Bonneville. But there's so many people that just want to go out there, see how fast they can go, have a good time, say that they did it. And that's probably the most safest car and inexpensive car for what you get for your money. Right now, because they switched to the new car, cars are available for sale, and I know that you can buy them very, very reasonable. You don't have to do a lot of things to convert them over for the Salt. You can basically put any engine in it that you want to. The only thing that we would suggest and the SCTA strongly suggests is that you don't run the NASCAR-type tires on it. They do make a Bonneville-specific tire. Goodyear and Mickey Thompson, you know, both make them. And what we did with the stock car is we just made the rear end a little bit wider so that we could put a narrower tire on it. So we put like a 4.5-inch rim with a narrow Bonneville-type tire and put a straight rear end in it because, you know, their rears are a little twisted for the round tracks. Mm-hmm. And did a little bit different front suspension, but you really don't have to do that much to a NASCAR stock car to go out there. And there is several fellows that go out there. A friend of mine, Aaron Brown, he's gone out there several times with a late model type NASCAR cars, a COT car. And then he actually built a couple of retro type cars. He built the Ford Torino, I believe it was, and the Dodge Daytona, and they went out there last year, you know, just to have a good time with him. And there's a couple of other fellows that take stock cars out there, and they have a good time with them, and they can go very fast.
Those guys with the retro cars, that is an unbelievable program. That is just so cool to see. And I would love to have those guys on as guests because
a lot
of questions.
Yeah, he'd gladly come on. He's a great guy, Aaron. You know, he's building a couple of street roadsters right now to take to Bonneville this year. And he's also building a Streamliner for next year. The Streamliner's coming along, you know, very well. And the two street roadsters are... They'll probably be done within the next month or so. But he's a great guy, great fabricators over there. They really do, you know, very, very nice work.
And that's the Garage Shop team, is that right?
Yes. They're in Denver, North Carolina.
Yeah, very cool. Well, last year, I know I was over at the short course, at the rookie course, and met a couple of gentlemen who had an old Roush car, NASCAR. And I think the one guy, I wish I could remember these gentlemen's names, but the one guy owned a recycling yard, a scrap yard. So he went shopping in his yard and just pulled out a 5.3, you know, Chevrolet motor out of whatever, and they just threw that thing in it. And like you're saying, changed tires and a couple things, and they had a blast with that car.
Yeah, yep. And like I said, actually, I wish I had one myself right now because they have a test and tune in July at Bonneville. The Utah Salt Flat Association puts it on. And if I had a car like that, I would take it there in July to let Jason's son Jack drive it just to get some experience on the salt. That's actually what we did few years back when we had Kaylin Stewart drive the car. She was young with no salt experience, and a friend of mine, Bob Hustler, had one of Dale Jr.'s Busch cars, and he took it out there for me, and they ran Kaylin in it, and she did all her licensing. She did up to the 150, 175, and up to 200, and that way it saved us a lot of time for when we got to Speed Week. So I'm going to search around just to see if I can, you know, maybe hook up with somebody to try to do that with Jack this year, just to get him some extra seat time before we head on over for Speed Week.
That is so cool. And it touches on the next topic here, which is something that you guys do, which is pretty unheard of in most forms of racing. And that is, you share your cars. You guys, you know, and especially the truck now, I know four people personally that have gotten licensed and gone very fast in your truck.
Right. Well, like I said, we've been fortunate that we've been successful out there, and we did get 10 drivers in the 200 club. We almost got number 11 with Zach Straits, and we missed it by about a half a mile an hour. But, you know, hopefully we can redeem ourselves maybe later on this year. But what we try to do is it's all the teams and what have you that help me out. They go to Bonneville, you know, they go on their vacation time. They help me with the truck. They help me get it there and back, work on it there, at the shop at home, and what have you. I basically have a volunteer crew. And I say, as long as we're having a good time, you know, we'll keep doing it. So, you know, it's just people that have really been involved with me and with us, you know, for a while. And, it's just a way to, you know, kind of repay them for doing it.
Well, it's super cool. It's really impressive and very admirable that you do that. The people that you've been able to put behind the wheel, you've changed their lives. I mean, for sure. Chris Rashke at ARP is one of them. I mean, his red hat is sewn to his head, I think.
every post that he does with my red hat.
You know? Oh, yeah.
So, yeah. Well, I have a feeling that there's a good possibility that Chris might jump over the blue hat this year and go right for the black.
Well, that would be pretty special if he's able to do that. Kind of along those lines, Steve Watt was telling me at Maxwell Industries that he went from, you know, basically zero to red hat in a very short period of time, thanks to your truck. And, you know, he's like, there are people that do this for years and years and years, and you afforded them the opportunity to just go out there and do it.
Well, again, Steve's been a lot of help with us, with him and his company. And we went there I guess it was Speed Week in 2020, and we switched classes and we let Steve drive, and we qualified for the record, and we would have gotten him in the two club with the backup, but we did have an engine problem, and we weren't able to back up the record. So we went home and we regrouped, and we came back in 2021. And we did a couple of different classes, and then when we changed classes, I said to Steve, you know, let's give this a try. And fortunately, Steve was already licensed because we had done that the previous year. Mm-hmm. So then he made his two runs, and fortunately, we got him in the 200 club.
So yeah, that is really, really awesome. Let's talk a little bit about the truck. Okay, so what is this thing? I know it's yellow. That's about all I know about it so far.
Okay, well, it's had a different, pretty much a different paint design every year that we go out there. I just like to, you know, keep things a little bit different looking. But in any case, we started back in 2005 building it. And we had planned on going, I think it was in 2005, but it got rained out, so we didn't go. We've been going there since 2006. It was basically a stock, cheap Dodge 1500 quad cab pickup. No power windows, small engine, what have you. And we had had quite a few NASCAR Dodge engines. And I just looked at the rule book and tried to figure out, when I was out there one year helping someone, the track was terrible. And the only vehicles that were getting down the track were wide, long, and heavy. And I said, you know, what can we build that's wide, long, and heavy and pretty much be competitive? So I looked at the truck classes, and the trucks never really seemed to have that much of participation in it. So I said, you know, let's build a truck and we'll try to go 200 with it. So we took the truck and, you know, had a full roll cage put in it, put a 9-inch rear in it. We did a NASCAR type front suspension on it. And, you know, the normal things that you'd put in it, you know, for a race truck. And we just had one of the Dodge engines, and we went out there the first time. Well, what we did, we dynoed it, and everything was okay. And then once we got the drivetrain in it, we had two drive shafts because the wheelbase was so long. So I took it over to Penske Racing, and they put it on the chassis dyno for me, and it proved that the driveline was all okay, and we weren't going to have any problems there. So we went to Bonneville, and our goal was to go 200, and on the very first run, it went 203.
Oh, man.
Jimmy Barton was driving it, and then we backed up that record, and then we switched the next day. We put the 2.4s on it, and we went out there and reset the record at 224 miles an hour.
Wow.
So then right away you start getting greedy, like, well, how much faster can we make this go? You know, what's it going to take? We'll put turbochargers on it. So we put twin turbochargers on it. We went back the next year, and I think we went in the high 240 range, but a couple of things weren't really correct on it. It was our rookie year for turbos and what have you, and truthfully, we didn't have a clue. So we went back the next year with the turbos, with actually a little bit smaller engine, and we wound up going 262 miles an hour with it for that record. I will back up a little bit. When we first ran the truck, it was basically a stock-bodied Dodge truck. The only thing that we were allowed to do was a front air dam from the leading edge of the bumper, you know, straight down. Mm-hmm. Well, then, fortunately, we had a very good relationship with Dodge, so they let us use the wind tunnel in Auburn Hills, Michigan. And the fellow that actually designed the SRT-10 truck with the Viper engine, he came to the wind tunnel with us, and we had all the SRT-10 package to put on the truck at the wind tunnel. So that included the rear spoiler, the rear bumper cover, the front bumper with the air dam and the splitter, the different hood with the little scoop-type thing on it. And everything that we put on the truck that he designed for it made the truck that much better in the wind tunnel. So from that point on, when we went back to Bonneville, I think that was our fourth year in going. It's been the SRT-10 package from that point on.
Okay. So there's a couple of cool things here. One, this started off as a real truck. This wasn't, a race vehicle from the start.
Correct.
And you converted a street-driven truck to be a race car.
and actually, if I can just interrupt you for one second, that truck used to be a parts delivery truck, and actually it delivered petty racing engines in the back of it to Daytona Beach.
No kidding.
That's what the truck was used for. It was hauling NASCAR Cup engines back and forth.
You know, I'm seeing a character in the next sequel to the Cars movie series, you know, where the truck that it works all day and someday I wish I could run one of these petty engines I've got in the back, and then you make its dream come true.
that's almost true. Yep, yeah. That was ironic that happened that way. But yes, it was a very, very stock truck to begin with.
And it also is a perfect example of what the RPM Act is trying to protect, right? Because one of the things that they were looking to outlaw was the ability to take a street-driven vehicle and convert it to a race car. And a lot of people are like, well, who does that? Well, here's a great example.
Right. Yep. Yeah, we did it.
So we've talked already about the first engine, which was naturally aspirated, and the 2.4s and the turbos. You, in addition to the design and colors of this thing, you change up the driveline fairly often too.
The engine, yes. And that's how we wound up with 13 different class records. We've had naturally aspirated engines. We've had a 304, a 370, a 385. And that was all in the Dodge NASCAR R5P7 design. Mm-hmm. And then we had the DRCE2 Pro Stock GM engine. We had that at 500 cubic inches and then just a little bit over, just to make it so it went into the next class. It was just 502 cubic inches. They were both naturally aspirated. And in the turbocharged, we've only run the Dodge NASCAR-based engine with turbocharging, and we've done a 256-inch engine, a 293, a 358, and a 385.
Wow.
Those were the turbocharged combinations that we have. And then they also have the fuel and the gas classes. So we have run the same engine package in the gas class and in the fuel class. Mm-hmm. If no matter which one we run, we still run gasoline, but you're just allowed to run the fuel class if you choose to do so, and you just don't have to go through fuel check like you do with the gas class. That gives us an extra class to run with the same engine combination.
So how many different classes has this thing run in now, do you know?
Well, we've run in the modified pickup truck class, in the gas classes, we've run AA, A, B, C, and D. In the fuel classes, we've just run D, as in David. In the blown classes, we've run B, C, D, and E with gas, and we've done B and E on fuel. It gets confusing, but we have run. I don't have the list in front of me, but it is 13 different classes that we have right now.
Yeah, that's cool, and the Bonneville SETA rule book and the class breakdowns can really be tricky to follow if you don't know, you know, the ins and outs. Most of that stuff is based on engine size, and then if it's, you know, supercharged or not, and what kind of fuel you run, and then if it's a modified or a stock vehicle, yeah, or a, you know, roadster or a streamliner, basically coupe and streamliner, roadster.
Yeah. The basic thing that they have is very strict is the body design. Mm-hmm. The engine is kind of common no matter what you put it in, other than a production vehicle. But if you run a production vehicle, you have to pretty much run the type of engine that vehicle came with. Mm-hmm. Then if you run a comp coupe, well, that's basically a stock body from the firewall back. However, you're allowed to chop the top and lengthen the front end on it. And then when you get into the gas coupe, that's pretty much a complete stock body with just a couple little modifications. But it's really, there's a lot of it that's based around the body design. And then, like you said, it's either it's either supercharged, turbocharged, or naturally aspirated. And then it's either if you run gas class or fuel class. But a big part of their rule book is the body design, whether, like you said, the streamliners to the street roadsters. There's many, many, many classes. And yeah. I remember when I was reading the rule book, I knew that I was going to build the truck, but you know, I'd sit in the TV room with my wife every night, and I'd she knows I don't read that much, but I'm reading this rule book every night. And about a month later, she said, "How long is it going to take you to read that one book?" And I said, "You got to read between every single line to make sure that you don't miss anything." And so far, I did a pretty good job on not missing anything.
Well, for sure, you know, it's really impressive that you were able to build this truck and get it out there and have success with it in the rule book. It's one thing just to show up and run. And a big challenge of this is that you can't just go down the street to your local track on the weekend and, you know, or a Wednesday night test and tune. I mean, you only have a couple chances a year to run this. And that's if the weather cooperates and you have people to help crew and everything else.
Yep.
So you really got to be focused on getting everything right, kind of right off the trailer.
Well, we really strive ourselves in making sure that we're as right as we can be. You know, we check and double check and triple check and just make sure that, you know, we feel that we've got our ducks in a row for when we unload. And fortunately, most of the time, you know, we hit it right. But, you know, we have had our problems from time to time, but we always manage to overcome it.
So tell me what the pit crew team experience is like when you guys are out there.
Well, there are several things. You know, we need the push truck to push the vehicle around and what have you. So a lot of times I'll do that, but sometimes we don't. But we make sure we go through all the driveline things okay. We at the end of the day, we put it up on jack stands and just check everything underneath, take all the wheels and tires off of it, get any salt on it that's been caked up on the inside of the rim so it doesn't, you know, create any kind of a wheel balance. You just need to make sure that we've got everything we need when we get up to the starting line in case there's a problem. We've got generators and battery chargers and jumper cables and what have you. Make sure we have, you know, what we think we might need in case of an emergency at the last minute up there. When we qualify for a record, we have to get to impound within an hour, and then we have 4 hours to work on the vehicle. So we have to make sure we have all the equipment and tools and what have you that we need in the impound area to work on the vehicle for those 4 hours. You have to put a tarp down so you don't trip anything onto the salt. And we just bring everything over there to work on it. We try to have that ready to go in case we qualify for the record. In the morning to do the backup run, you have 1 hour to work on it. So we have to get ready to preheat the oil, prime it, fill the ice water tank up in the back that we have for our intercooler or cold air package, depending on which engine. We have an hour to do all that. Run the drive line in, make sure everything is okay, retorque the wheels and tires, and head to the starting line to do the backup run. If we're fortunate enough to set the record, we go back to impound, and then they have to check the motor out, so we have to get ready to P&G the motor and get that checked out. But, you know, we keep busy. And then sometimes whether we have a unfortunate mishap with the engine or if we choose to just change it to run a different class, then we get into our engine changing mode, which we've done many times out there. And that's, you know, that's quite a bit of work. Sometimes it's a little difficult, you know, doing it on the salt. Last year we actually took the truck over to a friend of mine who has a garage out there, and we made the engine swap there. But we have done it on the salt, and we pretty much have crates with all the parts and pieces in it for the engine changeover when we do the swap, so that we have everything ready to go. And there's been times where we've qualified for the record We've set the record with one engine that morning, and we've gone through tech, got it certified, went back to the pit area and changed the motor and got back in line and qualified for the next record. And then fortunately backed it up the next day. So that was probably our ultimate weekend.
That is that's really impressive to be able to pull that off. Yeah, and you know, the neat thing about being out there and your insight about having somebody off site that you can use, that's something that I had never really considered. I've been out there, well, this will be my fifth year in a row, I guess, coming up. And it's been my vision that, you know, you're trying to do this basically on the moon. You know, you don't have a lot of resources. Maybe somebody can run into town to get something, but what are they going to have there that you're going to need in a 250 mile an hour, you know, land speed car?
Right.
So that is kind of an interesting approach to befriend somebody who you can drag this thing off site and use the electricity all night and everything to change an engine if you need to.
Yeah, fortunately, you know, a friend of ours, John Hansen, he's connected with the casinos out there, one of the managers, but he has his own shop out there, and he does everything for the racers. He's in the two club himself. He runs a car with him and his son and a few people, and they've been successful also. But he's just a great guy to all the racers, and fortunately, you know, he lets us use the shop if we need to.
That's great, yeah. And the other thing I really like about this sport is how helpful everybody is. Because it's not like, you know, a NASCAR race where you're competing next to somebody and there's $1 billion on the line, you know, if you don't win.
Right.
It's purely a passion sport.
It is. It certainly is. I guess fortunately I got hooked on it when I first went out there, but it's always been about helping out. I did an engine program for a few years with Mike Cook. I got hooked up with Mike. Stonewoods and Cook drag race car back in the days. It was probably one of the first models I put together when I was probably 12 or 13 years old. And it was my most favorite drag race car of all time. And then I met Mike out at the Salt Flats and, you know, told him, you know, what a hero his father was to me and the team. So, you know, he had a car and he hadn't been running it too much. And I said, well, let's put a motor in it and go have some fun. And, you know, fortunately, we ran three or four different classes with his car. And we were fortunate enough to set the records in the classes that we did run. And he still holds those records. So, you know, that was just a friendly type thing to, you know, to get hooked up with somebody and do something a little bit different. And then a few years back, a friend of mine, two friends that worked for Childress in the engine program, they had their own SB2 engine, but they were going to have to do their licensing and what have you. And I said, listen, I got a Dodge motor. I said, if you want, put it in there and, you know, you can do all your licensing and get used to the salt instead of beating up your own engine. And then, you know, save that for when you're ready to go for it. So he wound up running it, and then he wound up setting the degas roadster with it, record with it. And then they put their own SB2 in it and were successful with that as well. And but, it, you know, it was all about, you know, helping out and having fun with other people. And, you know, I just enjoy doing it. And as far as putting other people in the truck, I did it 1 year and I got in the two club and that was fine for me. And I have, you know, just as much pleasure with working on it and helping other people out and, you know, making their dream a reality as well.
Well, yeah, the takeaway from this is that Wayne Jezel's a good friend to have. Because just hearing the stories of, you know, exchanging help and, you know, sharing the experience is really cool. So to kind of wrap all this up, two more topics. One, so the the Equal8 engine is now going to be run in the truck. So let's talk a little bit about the motor. What size is the cubes on this thing?
Okay, it first started out when Danny built this one. It was 429, I believe, maybe 430. And through the testing process and what have you, there was a little bit of problem from time to time, and then he had a board a little bit bigger. So this motor wound up being 441 inches, and that was the first motor, and we have that motor now. The plan is we have that motor in the truck right now. We use it for the mock-up. We got the headers built for it. We did the carburetors and linkage for it. It's out right now getting the air pan and air box made for it, for the fresh air system for the carburetors. Once I get that the truck back, I'm going to take that motor out of it. Jason's going to take that motor, take it apart, hone it, put new pistons in it, and basically put it back together. And we'll dyno it to make sure everything is okay. And if all goes well, that will be the backup engine, which will be 441 cubic inches. Okay. Now, the next engine, Jason and I are going to New Jersey on Monday to pick everything up. The next engine will be a little bit smaller bore, just a little bit more stroke, but it'll be 429 inches. And that will hopefully be the primary engine. If we run that engine first, we will run B gas modified pickup. Mm-hmm. If we decide to change engines and put the 441 in it, that puts it just over the limit for B, and we would have to run A. So we will have two different options if we run either, if one motor runs at one point, and if there's a problem with it, we can change it and put the other one in. If there's no problem with it and we're successful with it, we might put the other one in just to run another class and, try for another record.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But those are the two size engines of the Equal8 that we plan on taking to Bonneville.
And I know, I don't think we touched on the reason why it's called the Equal8, and it's because of the symmetry and the equal design of the cylinder head and the air path.
Correct. Everything is equal on it as far as the layout goes. There was no compromise that, one cylinder had to be offset, or, one lifter position or one pair or two pairs have to be in a little bit different position to get the geometry right. Everything was equal, and everything is straight as far as the valve train geometry goes.
Yeah. Well, it'll be neat to see and hear that one run out there, because like you're saying, I like that idea of kind of knowing what the max capabilities are for RPM and running it just below that so that it stays together, because you're probably not going to find, components for this thing at the local AutoZone. So you want to keep this one together.
Yeah, that's for sure. The other thing is, in running this motor, I think it would just be, if we just tone it down a little bit to run that RPM, we're better off, because if we wound up running a much higher RPM, then you really have to get into some, really low gear ratios to make it work at that RPM to go the speed that we're looking to go. So it's just going to be a little bit easier on the valve train and also on the drive line of the vehicle. So I think we're going to be accomplishing two things by trying to run it at around in 9,500 range.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And you mentioned a number. So is there a record speed number that you're looking for this year?
Well, right now, at the one class that we're going to run, we currently hold that record at 221. It was very conservative at the time, and I feel that with the horsepower that we should have with this engine versus what we've run in the past, I would like to think that it's probably in the 230 to maybe 235 range, providing that we have a decent track to run on and that, you know, we've done our homework correctly with the engine and what have you. So it should be somewhere in the 230 to 35 range.
The interesting thing about bouncing around in different classes is that you know that the truck itself has gone a lot faster than that, so those variables are kind of taken out.
Correct.
What's the fastest it's gone?
Well, the fastest it's gone, unfortunately, it spun at 270. Wow. It spun through the four-mile marker, and the average at the four-mile marker was still 260 miles an hour. So we were going for it. Jimmy Barton was driving it, and what happened was he pushed the boost button, and he didn't really feel all that much, and he pushed it again, and it added another 2 pounds of boost. And as soon as it did that, it struck the tires and just spun around.
Yeah, and just broke traction.
We don't have traction control, and you really just have to feather it. It just can't handle that kind of horsepower without traction control. I mean, we've been on a good track, and you still really have to be careful with spinning the tires with adding boost to it. Yeah. And again, we were rookies with the turbo stuff, and we made a mistake by putting too much boost in too far down the track, and we kind of learned from it. But I'm gonna back off from the turbocharged engines for a while here and go back to some naturally aspirated stuff.
That's cool. Well, I love that you're able to have fun with this thing and do all those different approaches, because, you know, most people, if they're fortunate enough to build a car, you know, an engine and just work on that one, you know, for years and years and years, it's got to be really exciting to say, well, let's see what this one does.
Right.
Yeah. Well, listen, Wayne, this has been a real honor to have you on the show, and I love hearing the stories, and, you know, we all appreciate what you guys do. It's really cool to see all the other people that are able to drive this thing, and then, of course, you know, it seems like every time you look at the truck, it's different, you know, under the hood, and like you say, with the paint scheme, and it keeps it fresh and fun to follow, and it's a new set of challenges every time with the new combination, so it makes it a fun thing for fans to follow. And speaking of that, if somebody wants to learn more, is there a website or a Facebook page or somewhere they can go check you guys out?
Well, we do have a Facebook page, Jesselland Speed Team, and I try to update that. I mean, obviously, there's not a lot going on typically during the year, but I've posted a few things somewhat recently when we put the engine in it to mock it up, and when we got the headers built and did the carburetors, manifold and carburetors and what have you. And I think we've settled on a wrap design for this year, so I'll be putting that up shortly. And we just try to keep everybody posted once we get, you know, close to getting ready for Bonneville. And then once we get there, we try to post what we can as far as updating and just keep everybody informed as to how we're doing out there.
Well, there you go. I hope you guys do wonderful again this year. Please say hi to your brother and Mr. Line next time you talk to him.
Okay.
Well,
it's been a pleasure. Thanks for having me on, and I'll look forward to hearing some more in the future. And I hope to see you at Bonneville.
Absolutely. I got the rooms and the plane, and that's all set up, so we will definitely see you out there.
Okay, great. Sounds good.
Yeah, and again, thanks again for joining us.
Okay, thank you.
The Bonneville Up to Speed podcast is produced with the blessing of the Southern California Timing Association and is available on all major podcast platforms. Subscribe if you're into land speed racing, and be sure to visit scta-bni.org for all the latest news and the calendar of SCTA racing events at El Mirage and the Bonneville Salt Flats. Thanks for tuning in. And for Mr. Wayne Jessel, I'm Kevin Oste, and now you are up to speed.